The Fan on Demand. Tennis, anyone?
This is Miloš Raonic, and you're listening to Aces on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
And thanks very much for the introduction, Miloš, and welcome to Aces, everybody. My name is Roger Lajoie. Tom Tebbit on the line from France, as, of course, the French Open is underway. And this is Aces, your tennis show here on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Thanks so much for following our program, as you have, folks, the last couple of years now. Our pleasure to do it for you. Really great to hear from you. As always, we're going to have Tom's mailbag at the end of the program tonight. And Tom invites your questions, comments, anything on tennis. So let's hear from you. You can email the show, roger@sportsnet590.ca, roger@sportsnet590.ca, or drop a tweet at TheRog590, at TheRog590 on Twitter. We'll take your questions and comments. Later in the show, we have a pair of tickets to the Rogers Cup to give away. We've got some great prizes, of course, coming up later in our season. And we'll also have Tom's mystery sounder. And now the mystery sound voice, live from Paris, is our own Tom Tebbit. Tom, are you munching on a croissant? You better put it down there.
No, I just had a little sip of red wine with a couple of friends at a nice little place after finishing work reasonably early tonight, a quarter after 11.
Well, that's pretty impressive. Nice night. Now, you would know the weather here. It's pouring rain here in Toronto tonight, but I understand there's some weather issues there, judging by the suspensions and one postponement we had on today's docket.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is the best tournament for weather, quite frankly. It rains here, but it's not like Wimbledon where it socks in for two or three days. Here it rains, and then you get, you know, 3 hours of rain, then it clears up for 3 or 4 hours. Even today, it looked pretty bad till 3 o'clock, then basically you got a lot of play-in starting around three. So it is chilly, but, you know, I'm a Canadian. Well, most of us can handle this kind of stuff, and it's much better than the excessive heat in Australia or all that rain in England.
Well, that's very true. Well, later on the program, Mats Wilander will, in conversation with Tom, of course, one of the all-time greats, and in a few moments we'll hear from Angelique Kerber as well. We also have the mystery voice coming up on the program. And again, reach us anytime, roger@sportsnet590.ca, by email, and ask Tom a question for our mailbag, or you can drop us a tweet at the Rog 590. So recap what you've seen today in your before you went and had your glass of wine, Tom. What kind of a day was it at the French Open?
Well, it took a while to get going, and unfortunately, I think for the center court crowd, Marion Bartoli, they put a women's match on, and she was playing Govertova from Belarus, and that thing finally didn't get on, really get going until about 3, and then it went on until 6, and then Djokovic finally got on and played the match against Goffin from Belgium, and he played that quite well. It was quite a competitive match with Djokovic, but I spent most of my time watching Vasek Pospisil, and he played his match against Ceballos from Argentina, and he lost first two sets, but he played great. Then he played really well in the third one, and he was up 4-1 in the fourth, and then he wanted to keep going. Ceballos called for the supervisor. It was all sort of dramatic and grandstanding and all that stuff. Finally, they called it a 4-1 for Vasek in the fourth set. So hopefully he can finish off that set tomorrow and maybe win in five. But he would like to have kept on playing, and the other match is still going on, but they decided to call it, and I guess that's the supervisor's choice.
Well, in the end, that does happen. And like you said, Tom, one of the things about, you know, we sometimes make a big deal about weather in the early portion of a tournament, but these players are used to it. And anyone who's been there, maybe just talk to us before we get to the interview with Angelique Kerber. Got to ask you just about the entire environment there. I mean, it's one of the spectacular, it's a bucket list thing for a lot of people to get to a tournament like that. Talk to us about how the French Open compares to all the other great tennis events you've covered.
Well, I think the only negative now here is that they have limited space to expand. So when the two main stadiums, Philippe Chatrier and Susan Longland, get out, you're packed in like sardines. It's not very pleasant at all. But when you're sitting in the stadium and it's a nice day and there's this beautiful light and the fantastic red clay and, you know, the French women hand them in, I guess, dress very well and look pretty good. And there's just something just fantastic about it. And you can't just ignore the fact that it's located in Paris. And I just walked home with an American friend, and he was telling me about this place across the street that had fantastic croissants, chocolate croissants, and almond croissants. And so the fact that it's in Paris, I think you can't ignore that. That adds a lot to the tournament.
Oh, spectacular. You're a lucky man for sure. Tom Tebbit is in Paris, the French Open. I'm Roger Lajoie. It's Aces on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. So glad you're with us once again this year, and great to be bringing you a series of tennis shows throughout the course of the tennis season right up until September. The Rogers Cup, a big focus for us, of course, and we have Rogers Cup ticket giveaways on every show and your chance to win a great prize later in the season as well. So stick around later. All right, tell us a little bit about Angelique Kerber, Mr. Tebbit.
Well, she was a bit of a late bloomer. She made the U.S. Open semifinals in 2011, sort of out of nowhere. And last year, she was actually in the Wimbledon semifinals. She's ranked number 8 in the world. Now, I think she's been as high as number 5. She's an interesting player in the sense that she's a very good athlete. You know, and some players, like the big hitters, they don't run so well. And some run pretty well, but maybe don't hit that big. And she does both. So she's a fine athlete and a good player. But like I said, a little bit surprising. She, a bit of a late bloomer, say at 23. She's now 25. But, I mean, she's a fun player to watch because, like I said, she can do both things. And, she beat Serena Williams last August in Cincinnati, so she can play with girls.
She can play with the big girls, and she had a great conversation with her own Tom Tebbit. Here is Tom's conversation with Angelique Kerber.
Angelique Kerber, welcome to our show.
Hello.
Angelique doesn't sound like too much of a German name. Where did it come from?
It's a French name, actually, but my parents like this name, so that's why I'm Angelique.
Does it cause any problems in Germany?
No, nothing. I think I have, some people are calling me Angie, and it's fine in Germany.
Right. Your first big breakthrough, obviously, was at U.S. Open, and I think that Andrea Petkovic, you were practicing with her a month, a week or two before, whatever, and she said, watch out for this woman. She's a very, very good player. Did that help playing against her?
For sure. We was practicing like a few weeks before the U.S. Open where I played the semis, and she gave me some tips to be tough and to believe in me, and to practice with her is always a good time, and we are friends. We know each other a long time, so it's always nice to practice with her.
You're about the same age as her. Is there any reason you didn't make a breakthrough sooner?
I don't know. I mean, we are both playing so long, and we know each other very well, so I also knew that she will come back soon as well, and because she's also a very good player.
And you're a very powerful player, but you're also a very good defensive player. You run down a lot of balls. Do you consider yourself halfway between the two, or do you one more than the other?
I think both. I mean, I like to play also aggressive, but also when you are in the defensive, you need to play very good because a lot of players are playing very hard in this time. And so I'm very happy that I can play both and mix it together.
And do you, before you start a match and you're playing a defensive player, do you think I will play offensive? And if you're playing an offensive player, then you'll say I'll play defensive. Is it the opposite you try to play depending on who the opponent is?
Actually, no. Actually, I was every time thinking about my game to be aggressive, of course, and to mix it, not playing like just hitting the balls like with all my power. So to be in the point and also run a little bit because this is my game and I will not change it.
People who watch your matches on TV, I'm sure, have seen the on-court coaching. Your coach comes out quite a bit. It seems to work quite well for you. What do you expect from him when he comes out to see you?
Actually, he is coming to me and just remember the plan we spoke before the match and just say, be relaxed, believe in yourself and nothing special. You know, it's just he is coming and speak with me a little bit and then I feel better and start actually to play better than before.
Do you like to be able to say something back to him, or do you just like to listen?
Sometimes I say something back, but I try to listen what he is telling me.
Right. Being a left-handed player, some players are able to use being left-handed better than others. Do you think you maximize the fact that you're a left-handed player in terms of maybe the spins or being able to curve the ball out of the court and pick on maybe a right-hander's backhand?
Ask the right-hander. I mean, I hope and I think that I'm playing like a left-hander. Of course, I can make also in my serve a little bit more the spin or the slice in the left-hander serve, but I think altogether I'm playing like a lefty.
This may be a little bit of a silly question, but what would you think is the best technical advice you ever got? Is there something that somebody told you about a grip or doing something with your serve that you really think helped you a lot in your game?
I think just hit the ball maybe earlier, not think too much, just hit the ball when the ball is coming, and I think this one. I don't know. It's hard to explain.
But it's not easy. You have to have a talent to hit the ball early. So I guess you must have that talent to start with, but you have to force yourself to do it. Is that it?
Yes, that's true. I think it is like, yeah.
I know it's a boring question too for German players, but obviously every player on the women's side in some way is descended from Steffi Graf. How did she influence you, and do you know her nowadays?
She was my idol when I started playing tennis, and I met her last year in Wimbledon. It's, of course, she did everything. She won everything, and she's a legend right now. And I don't know if somebody can make the same what she did in the past, but I think everybody is going her own way, and to have Steffi Graf in Germany and what she won, everything, it's good for German tennis.
You had a bit of a crazy match in Indian Wells this year, I think, with Wozniacki, when you got involved in a lot of moon balls. How does that happen in the match? Was that her? Was that you? Was that a combination? Is it a smart tactic? How did that happen?
I don't know. I think it was a combination from both of us. And but it's also tennis. You can play also like this at the tennis match. I think it's coming from both of us, and it was from both of us a little bit the tactic.
Right. You had a match with Sharapova in Stuttgart in the semifinal, and obviously you've had matches like this before, but when you're 5-5 in the third set, it's a pretty nervous time for both players. What's kind of going through your mind at that time?
It is a very nervous time at the match, but I think Sharapova had more experience in this point than me. I had maybe like 3 or 4 matches like this, and I think I was, you know, a little bit too defensive in the moment because I was, you know, nervous like it was, and she was more aggressive in this part of match, and that's where I can also learn for my matches and for the next step in my game.
In the quarterfinal last year, at Wimbledon with Lisicki, I mean, it was a really crazy match. Have you ever played a match that had that many emotions involved in it?
It was, of course, one of maybe some matches, but it was a very crazy match. I was up in the second, and she was up in the third, and there were so many emotions. So it was a very tough, and I think also a very good match for the crowd.
And how crazy do you feel inside in a match like that?
Of course, you are feeling sometimes a little bit crazy, but you try to be positive, and you try to be to stay in the match and stay in the moment. And I think I did it very good and won the match at the end. So it was for me a very, very nice win.
And you've just finished this match, and you're talking to me. You've already done some other interviews. How have you been sort of trained as a player? Do you just learn through maturity, or the WTA help you? How do you learn to deal with your media responsibilities?
The WTA help us, of course. And I try to be myself and just speak what I'm also thinking and just be relaxed, and that's it. I think that's the way.
There's a bunch of Polish players on the tour. Obviously, your Polish ancestry and the Radwanska sisters and Lisicki and Alexander Wozniak from Canada, and obviously Carolyn Wozniacki. Is there a bond amongst the players who have some Polish heritage and speak the language?
Maybe. I don't know, but there are a lot of Polish players at the tour, and I think it's also good to, you know, to... For me, it's good because I can speak with them Polish, and... there are a lot of players, yeah.
Well, good luck at the French Open, and thank you very much for being on our show.
Thank you very much.
And that is very charming. 8th-ranked player in the world, Angelique Kerber. Sounds like a charming young lady, Tom.
She is. She was very bubbly. Kind of all these things happened in a bit of a rush, and she'd done some other interviews that day, and we found a nice little small room and sat down and had a chat. And she is. I don't know if she's ever going to win a Grand Slam, but I don't think many players really want to play her because, like I said, she's an excellent athlete, a fine defensive player, but she can also clock the ball as well.
And piling up the points in the rankings, doing a nice job for sure, Angelique Kerber. Mats Wilander coming up later in the show, our mystery voice sounder. Once again this week, you could win Rogers Cup tickets and drop a question in Tom's mailbag because he'd like to answer it in our last segment of the show as well. Roger at sportsnet590.ca. Roger at sportsnet590.ca. We'll read your questions for Tom, or on Twitter at TheRog590. It's Aces Canada's tennis show on radio. I'm Roger Lajoie with Tom Tebbit, and this is Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Grand Slam tennis coverage. This is Aces with your hosts Roger Lajoie and Tom Tebbit of Tennis Canada. Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
And this segment of Aces is brought to you by Tennis Canada and the Rogers Cup. Serena, Maria, and the best of women's tennis returns to Toronto August 3rd to 11th. Get your tickets now at rogerscup.com. I'm Roger Lajoie. Tom Tebbit is on the line from Paris. French Open going on, and we will have a conversation with you via Twitter or email. Tom's mailbag's coming up in our last segment. You have a chance to win Rogers Cup tickets later in the show as well. Lots of questions coming in already tonight. Roger at sportsnet590.ca. We love your feedback. Roger at sportsnet590.ca. Follow us on Twitter at TheRog590. Drop us a line that way as well. And your questions for Tom coming up later. We'll have our mystery sounder. And if you can identify the mystery sounder and we prompt the phones and emails for you to drop in, you could win yourself a pair of Rogers Cup tickets later in the show. Tom, it is always, I got to believe, even for someone who's been around the great game of tennis as long as you have, lots of fun to talk to a former world's number one player, and you had an opportunity to do that.
Yeah, Matthew Leinart is a guy I've always admired. I was here, believe it or not, in 1982 when he won the French Open, and he was very shy then, but he's just evolved into a fantastic guy. I remember having a chat with him after I did this interview with another journalist. He couldn't have been more natural. Terrific guy. You have to listen to the interview. I kind of got him in a rush and made a mistake, said he'd only won 6 Grand Slam titles, and he actually sort of corrects me in a very subtle way later on in the interview.
Yeah, it's there's no question he has changed as the years have gone on, and I agree with you. I had an opportunity to meet him many years ago and found him a great guy as well. Here's Tom's conversation now with the former world's number one, Mats Wilander.
Max Wilander, welcome to Aces.
Thank you very much.
It was 31 years ago when you were a 17-year-old that you won the French Open. What comes to mind now when you think back to that day?
Well, I think it was more than... I think the whole tournament, it was the first time I played the main draw at the French Open, and I was unseeded, and I started beating Ivan Lendl in the fourth round, Vidas Gerulaitis, Jose Luis Clark, and then Guillermo Vilas, and they were all top five. So every match I won was just a big surprise, more than just the final. The final was the biggest surprise of all of them, maybe, but the whole two weeks was just a little early, maybe, for my career.
How do you think you were able to do it?
Oh, I think the main reason was that Bjorn Borg did not play that year, and for what reason, I'm not sure, but obviously he stopped playing, and I think everybody else thought they had this is our chance, we got to win now, because if Bjorn decides to come back in next, the following year in 83, then we can't win again, and I think everybody literally choked against me, and they couldn't believe there was another Swedish guy there playing nearly exactly the same way as Bjorn.
For our younger listeners, they probably the best way to explain it is that Bjorn Borg was exactly like Rafael Nadal nowadays. He was, if he'd stopped playing the tournament, and everybody would think they have a great chance. So it's sort of the same thing. I was there when you won in 82. I remember when you came into the press conference, you hardly said any words. You were like shell-shocked. I think at 17 years old, obviously you don't have all the communication skills. You have fantastic communication skills nowadays. But what was it like coming in after winning and facing all those media people?
Well, I was extremely shy at the time. I think the only time I wasn't shy was when I was on the court actually playing big matches, but you know, I don't remember very much from it. I had done a few press conferences before, but nothing major. I had no idea what I've done, really. I realized I won the French Open, but what that meant, I had no idea. I didn't think it was going to necessarily take me to more titles. It was just such an isolated event.
What did it mean to your family, your parents at the time?
Oh, I don't think that much. I mean, I think that my dad was a big supporter of my mom and my two older brothers, too. They came down for the finals. I worked hard, and I think they were just happy. But I was staying with my parents still at the time, and nothing really changed when I got home. I'm still the youngest of three brothers, still the youngest of all the Swedish tennis players at the time. So I was the one collecting the deck of cards and doing all their dirty laundry.
Another thing I recall, which is kind of surprising, maybe we're kind of prudish North Americans, but As I recall, you had your girlfriend here with you, one in 1982. She was staying in the hotel with you, and we're thinking, holy smokes, this guy is really liberated.
Well, that was Sweden, and it is Sweden. Yes, I realize now that I was very young to be traveling with my girlfriend. She actually came to the Italian Open the week before the French Open, too. I have four kids of my own, and when I look at my 18-year-old son, no, there's no way that his girlfriend would come for him when he plays a tennis tournament. But yeah, I don't know. I think that my parents were pretty liberal.
And did that help in any way, having her with you?
I have no idea. I don't think that a girlfriend at the time, I mean, tennis was what you're interested in, and a girlfriend, I don't think you knew what that meant, really, except you were going out together and having dinner and whatnot. But I think anything helps when you're young and you're winning. That takes the focus away from what you're actually accomplishing on the court when it is such a big sensation.
Once you retired and you played the senior tour, it seemed to me that you weren't quite as competitive. Connors and McEnroe, when they played the senior tour, were absolute maniacs. Did you have a different approach to it once you started playing on the senior tour?
Yeah, I think I always had a different approach. I think I was really competitive when I was playing professional tennis on the ATP Tour or the Grand Prix Tour. But my idea was always to be competitive in the match that I'm involved in, and also trying to improve and trying to work on my weaknesses and be a good player on all the different surfaces and learn how to volley, learn how to hit slice backhands. And then suddenly when you stop playing for real and trying to stop improving, my competitive spirit in trying to beat the other guy, I think, sort of went out the window a little bit. I'm still competitive in trying to play at a certain level.
A lot of people talk about players changing their games and things nowadays, and I don't think it's a very easy thing to do, but I think maybe of all the changes I've seen over my career watching tennis was you becoming more of an attacking player, volleying more, coming in a bit more. I think it helped you beat Yvonne Lendl one year at the U.S. Open. How do you think you were able to do that, and do you think it's that hard for players nowadays maybe not to try to do that?
Well, I think, first of all, how I did it, obviously when I was playing in the 80s, you played against a lot of guys that had one-handed backhands, sliced backhands. They were coming in, and some of the coolest guys around, like Yannick Noah, like Victor Pecci from Paraguay, like Peter McNamara from Australia, they had beautiful one-handed sliced backhands. We were always made by our coach to go and watch these guys hit sliced backhands. I've played mini tennis my whole life, and you serve and volley there, and you try and, who are you? I'm John McEnroe. Well, then you have to come to the net. So I've been doing that. Hadn't been doing that my whole life. So for me, it was just a natural evolution of my game. I had to do something to be able to win on different surfaces, so I changed. But it was just how you develop as a person and as a player to keep it more interesting. I think today the surfaces are a little bit more similar. I think they're obviously hitting the ball harder, so clay court looks more like grass courts or the other way around, which I think it's a pity that we don't get to see Nadal and Novak Djokovic and Andy Murray serve and volley more on grass. Be interesting to see those guys, how they would handle that. But, yes, it is harder. I think the bigger rackets and the new technology and the strings and all the spin they get on the ball, it's hard to get to the net. And if you can't do that, then it's hard to change your game.
You mentioned Yannick Noah. They're making a big fuss here about 30 years ago this year. He won the French Open. The guy on the other side of the net that day was a guy named Mats Wilander. What do you recall of that match?
I recall a lot, actually. I think I recall much, much more from that final than the previous final the year before when I won it. I remember that I thought I was the big favorite. I never had any idea of how big part the French crowd was going to play, which I felt that they did. Yannick Noah played an unbelievable finals against me. He played an unbelievable semis as well against quarterfinals against Yvonne Lendl. So he was playing well. I still thought I was going to win, but I learned a lot from that. I learned how he used the crowd. I learned how you have to be worried about the process in a tennis match, not the end result. So that day I learned that a short slice backhand in the middle of the service box is a very good approach shot. So Yannick Noah, most probably, that match is the most important match in my career, and I think I learned more from that loss than any other match I played.
Mats, I just had a look at the rankings, and the top Swedish player is number 443, Patrik Rosenholm. How do you react when you see something like that?
Well, I don't react to the fact that he, Patrick Rosenholm, is our highest-ranked player. I mean, we all know Robin Söderling was one of the best players in the world a couple of years ago. It's obviously not really sad, but it's confusing. Tennis is a big sport in Sweden. A lot of kids are playing tennis. It's growing in popularity, even though we don't have great tennis players, great professional men tennis players. I think Roger Federer and Rafa Nadal are doing such great things for the game globally that tennis is going to survive. I guess the reason, I think, is when you bring up children or kids in the Western world, I think there's a lot of competition, a lot of challenges that they have, and it's not easy to be out there on your own in tennis, laying it on the line every single day, and it's pretty painful tennis career, because you're on your own and you lose more than you win. And I think sometimes you have players today that maybe come from harsher environment, that have a passion, the hunger for winning and succeeding is most probably bigger than the one that American kids have, or Swedish kids, or certain part of Western Europe as well.
This is a bit of a tricky question when you try to compare generations, but you did play against Bjorn Borg, and obviously you've watched Rafa Nadal quite a bit. What would happen if they played each other? As I say, it's sort of a crazy question, but you know them both fairly well. And what do you think would have happened, and what were the main attributes of both players?
Well, I think they would have been playing for a very, very long time. Obviously, everybody knows you can never compare, because equipment's completely different. Every athlete becomes stronger with time, because we as human beings are stronger. But I think the mindset was very similar. I think that Rafa Nadal is more passionate on the outside, so I don't know how Nadal would have played against Bjorn Borg, because he didn't show very much emotion. He never made any mistakes. It was very hard to hit winners against him, so I think that it wouldn't be a match that the crowd necessarily wanted to see more than maybe once or twice, because every point would look the same. But yes, they're easily both are the best clay court players in the world. I guess you have to give the edge to Rafa Nadal, because he doesn't only win the French Open, he also wins all the other tournaments leading up to the French.
For a guy who grew up in Växjö, which is a city of 50,000 people in Sweden, how did you get to be such a great player? How did you get to be number one? How did you get to win 6 Grand Slam titles?
Bjorn Borg is the main reason. I started playing tennis before Bjorn Borg became a hero in Sweden. Like every boy in the 70s in Sweden, you play ice hockey, you play soccer, and you play tennis. And I think Bjorn Borg was the one that made it cool to focus only on tennis. He was easy to imitate. He was well-behaved, worked hard, never made a mistake. He had a kind of a modern technique that we all took after. So I think Sweden was the first country to really play modern tennis, and I think that's one of the reasons. But a lot of luck goes into winning 7 majors in singles for any person.
You're involved now in what's called WOW, Wielander on Wheels. For the people out there who don't know what that is, can you explain what it is and what you're up to?
Yes, Wielander on Wheels is me and another tennis pro, an American guy, and we travel around North America so far in the USA and Canada, and we conduct clinics, group clinics, at tennis clubs or public courts, whatever. And we do it for about 3 months of the year. So we spend about 80, 90 days on the road. We sleep. We have 2 RVs, and on the West Coast, one on the East Coast. And we stay in the RV. And we've been to about 160 clubs around the USA mainly, but also a couple places in Canada.
You're well known now, obviously, as a commentator, and maybe play a little bit of senior tennis, and you have your Wielander on Wheels. You're totally involved in tennis. Does Mats Wielander ever have it up to here with tennis, and what does Mats Wielander do to get it out of his mind and just do something else as a change?
No, I don't actually. I think I'm very, very fortunate, because I still play some competitive ATP Champions tournaments and exhibitions. Obviously, I do the Wielander on Wheels, so you get to deal and help, try and help amateur players with their game, and the reward there is just they're just happy to be on the same court, and if you can teach them something, that's great. And obviously, I'm a journalist just like yourself, and I love the sport. So I get a bit of everything. And no, I don't, because once I'm fed up with one part of it, I'm on my way to the next thing. And I'm really lucky that I realized I love the game of tennis. It wasn't winning, competing, working hard. It was just the sport of tennis is my passion.
Mats Wielander, thank you very much for being on Aces tonight.
Thank you for having me.
Hey, Tom, what a great attitude after all those years, still in love with the sport. You'd love to hear that.
Yeah, I mean, Vilander on Wheels is wow, W-O-W, and actually he's going to be in Ottawa this summer, and he's also going to be in Toronto, and I think he might also be in Montreal and Quebec City. He certainly was in Quebec City last year, so he gets up here, he enjoys it, and I don't know, we had a little chat afterwards, and I just couldn't find a more natural guy, a more less pretentious guy. He's terrific.
And one of the all-time greats, no question about it. Mats Vilander with Tom Tebbit coming up. It's time for Tom's Mailbag. The question, Roger at sportsnet590.ca, Roger at sportsnet590.ca, or drop it on Twitter at TheRog590. Tom, I'd love to hear from you, and we'll have our mystery sounder. You could win tickets to the Rogers Cup. That's coming up next on Aces with Tom Tebbit and Roger Lajoie right here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Prizes like no other, from a club like no other, The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. Without tennis, we might not have the tennis dress. Another reason to celebrate the game. This is Aces with Roger Lajoie and Tom Tebbit of Tennis Canada. Yeah! Sportsnet 590. 590. The Fan.
And this segment of Aces is brought to you by National Bank. Strong service, agility, and great returns are as important in banking as they are on the tennis court. That's why National Bank is proud to sponsor the 2013 Rogers Cup. Visit nbctennis.ca for details. I'm Roger Lajoie. Tom Tebbit is in Paris at the French Open. This is Aces on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. In just a few moments, we'll have our mystery sounder. So when we play the mystery sounder, we will tee up the email and Twitter again and drop your response. If your answer is correct, you'll be entered in a draw for a pair of Rogers Cup tickets coming up. And Tom, great prize for tennis fans for sure.
That's right. We have the Wilson Steam Racket with the ultimate in spin technology. And, of course, as usual, we have two tickets for the Rogers Cup. I think they're for Tuesday evening, August the 6th, and I'm sure that people will see the best in women's tennis.
Be exciting for sure as the women are here in Toronto this year. So stick around for that. That's coming up in minutes. But a regular feature of our program on Aces, of course, is Tom's Mailbag. And as usual, Tom, we have lots of people with questions for you. So let's get right to them. Charlotte says, does Tom have any theories on why Serena hasn't had more success at Roland Garros during her career? She's arguably the greatest player of all time, and yet she only has one title in Paris. Any theories, Tom?
Well, I think it would be the hardest surface for her to play on, the clay court, the hardest surface of all the four Grand Slams, because she has such a powerful game. It gets a little bit taken off it because the clay slows the ball down, so that would be one explanation. But she missed, I think, three times for injury or whatever, various reasons. And also, I think that maybe the pressure of not having done so well here has gotten to her. It certainly did last year in the first round when she lost to Rezzano, but she's looking great this year. It's really hard to see her losing. She's been playing so well lately.
See if she can add to her French Open resume this time around for sure. Thanks for the email, Charlotte. Vinny emails in, and thank you, Vinny. He's enjoying the program, listening, regular listener to the show. He says, the tennis ball seems to skid when it hits the lines and sometimes will bounce differently when a shot clips the lines. Can this not be fixed so the ball does not skid or bounce differently when it clips lines, says Vinny? Tom, is that really a problem, or is that just something that can't be fixed in terms of the way they chalk the lines?
Well, I think it's always going to be a problem. It's sort of interesting here because they actually have sort of chalk lines here, and probably at most clay court tournaments or clubs and parks and stuff at home and here as well, because some of the tournaments leading up to the French Open have actual tapes instead of like a chalk line. So I don't know. I've often wondered when they lay down carpets indoors why even then they can't somehow make the lines exactly the same as the rest of the court, but it's something they still haven't mastered.
Funny how that is for sure. Nick emails in and says, I'm a big fan of Mary Carrillo as an analyst. And I was disappointed when ESPN parted ways with her a couple of years ago. I was curious as to whether Tom knew the reasons behind ESPN's decision. Sometimes announcers come and go, Tom. Any idea on that one? Or how do they determine the shelf life of a tennis broadcaster anyway?
How about radio announcers, Rod?
Well, I don't even want to go there.
I actually don't know the details of that. I think she's still around doing something. I know she's actually in Paris now, so she may be working for Tennis Channel. Of course, we don't see any of that, so there's a possibility she's still doing some broadcasting. But, you know, it's who knows? Some tennis comments. One thing over the years I've seen is you can love Bud Collins or you can hate him. You can like Cliff Drysdale or Patrick McElhone and not like them. So it's a very subjective thing. But Mary Carillo, one thing I'll say about her, she always did her homework. I mean, she had never got on the air not knowing exactly what was going on.
There's no doubt, and we wish her well, and there's no right doubt, Tom, all kidding aside, just broadcasting, people do come and go. It's a kind of a transient business from time to time. So there you go on that one. Thank you. Mac emails in and is enjoying the show again. Mac, thank you very much. Another regular listener to our show. He'd like to know what your thoughts are, Tom, on Ivan being hired as Raonic's coach. Is it just for a trial period or is it permanent? And would Larry Stefanke be an option perhaps for Milos down the road? Asked Mac.
Yeah, a friend of mine works for the ATP. He mentioned Larry Stefanke. I hadn't really thought about him. He's sort of been out of a job since Roddick retired. I don't know if he'd want to do it. I'm not sure. I mean, I respect him a lot, so he'd definitely be a candidate. From what it sounds now, the two candidates are Ivan Ljubicic and possibly Brad Gilbert. So Ljubicic is here with him. Milos is saying he's a friend. He's helping out. Is Gilbert going to step in down the road? We don't know. Ljubicic, a lot of people admire him. He was involved in tennis politics with the ATP. You know, a very intelligent guy, a smart guy. Some people from Tennis Canada told me the other day after Milos's match, they were very impressed that he went and asked them what they thought. It wasn't as though he knew it all. So I think he'd be a good choice, but you can't deny that Gilbert's been a successful coach over the year as well.
Brian in Toronto emails in and says, guys, while watching the Nadal-Brands match yesterday, me and my friend got into a discussion about upsets in tennis. We have a theory that at least in men's tennis, big upsets are more difficult to pull off at the French Open than at Wimbledon because there are more ebbs and flows in clay court tennis, where we think an underdog can ride a weight of momentum within a match much better on grass, where things happen faster. What are Tom's thoughts on this, and is there any evidence over the years to support our theory? Thanks, Brian. It's an interesting theory, Tom. Does it make any sense to you?
Well, I don't know. I you know, there's been more sort of upset winners here. I can think early in the Albert Costa won here and Gaston Gaudio won here. And if you look at Wimbledon and the U.S. Open, especially, and there's been some surprises in Australia as well, which may be because it's early in the year. But Wimbledon and the U.S. Open really have basically been the thoroughbreds going back 20, 30 years at least, whereas here there have been some surprises. But, you know, but sometimes it's just between, you know, maybe between Nadal getting really good and some other player sort of Google Court and who won a few times here. So I don't know. I you know, it makes as much sense as anything, but I don't know what it is about Wimbledon and the U.S. Open. It always has been a bit of a mystery to me why they're always dominating. It's almost never a surprise person who wins there.
Brian, thanks for the email. Andre emails in, and he enjoyed watching Monfi play against Berdych yesterday. Says it was nice to see him playing much smarter and more aggressively, but I've seen him play like this before, and he never builds on it. Can he use his quality win as a springboard, or should we expect the same old maddening but entertaining Monfi in the future? We talked about him before, Tom. What do you think? And what do you think of the match?
He's really a fun player. Actually, he's kind of I remember he won the first three Grand Slams, whatever that was, you know, many years ago. And I remember at the U.S. Open, he was injured and couldn't complete the Junior Grand Slam. So he's had injuries and problems like that going way back. And that's really, he has basically a chronic knee problem. I remember he had a special machine to look after it. I think it's going to be tough for him. Tomorrow he's playing Ernest Gulbis. I think it's the third match on the Philippe Chatrier, the main court. And Gulbis, as we all know, is a very unpredictable, extremely talented player, very much like Monfi. So I think there'll be a lot of fireworks in that match. But I think the problem could be that Monfi had such a long match in beating Berdych. I don't know if they have enough gas left to be able to beat Gulbis tomorrow.
Tyson emails in, obviously a big Leighton Hewitt fan. He says, granted, he lost his first round match, but is there a bigger warrior in tennis than Leighton Hewitt? The guy's had so many injuries and surgeries, yet he is still out there battling. So not so much a question, but just a comment, I guess, on Leighton Hewitt from Utah.
Well, I've got two Aussies sitting beside me in the media room, and we were joking. I mean, he's basically got a bionic foot. I don't know how much metal he's got in there, and he's had so many surgeries. And I'm watching him play yesterday and almost pull off the match against Simon. It's very impressive. No, he is a phenomenal battler, and I have the utmost respect for him on the court. I'm not quite sure why he's still out there because he's sort of diminished now, but really always gives 100% effort and never was that great with the media, but it was never bad. You know, he always did his thing properly and never really got too chippy.
No, no doubt about that. Sophia says it's often been said that winning the French Open and Wimbledon in the same season is one of the toughest doubles to pull off in pro sports. No doubt about that, I don't think. Not saying that the feat has become easy, but is it any less difficult feat today because the services are not as dissimilar as they once used to be? Or, Tom, is it just basically the French Open and Wimbledon just because of what they are, really tough to win both?
No, I think it is much easier today because the players are staying at the back of the court, both in Paris and at Wimbledon. So the game has changed enormously. It always used to be automatic serve and volley. Federer did that in 2003 when he won the first time, and then the next year he started staying back almost all the time. So definitely the game is played on the court is much more similar than it used to be. So since the game isn't that, actually, Vilander told me that when I talked to him, he said the question people most ask him is, who is the toughest guy to play? And he said, well, in those days, in the old days, every surface made a difference. But now, because the surfaces are sort of the same, the players are playing the same, it's sort of the same rivals each tournament, whereas it was different in the past because the surfaces were so different and the players played much differently on each one.
Time for a fast one. Luke emails in. Luke, thank you. Everyone at his tennis club in Scarborough listens to the show, so Luke, we really appreciate that. He says he'd like just like Tom, a little more information about Pancho Gonzalez. I hear historians like Bud Collins and others talk about him, but I never got to see him play because this Luke is only 23 years old. Just give us 30 seconds on Pancho Gonzalez and his great career, Tom.
I always say I think that with Borg and obviously Federer and Laver and Sampras, I put him in my top five or six just because I've heard so much about what a great fighter he was. And he was a nasty piece of work, but he came up sort of as a Mexican-American from the wrong side of town. And when he was out there and when he traveled in the Pro Tour, he was very much a loner. But a lot of people said in the day, if he had one person to play for you in a match, you wanted Pancho Gonzalez. So he was a truly exceptional player.
Thanks for your emails. Now, keep that email handy, roger@sportsnet590.ca, roger@sportsnet590.ca, or on Twitter at TheRodge590, @TheRodge590, because, Tom, you have a very special mystery sounder for us this week, don't you?
Yeah, you need your Larousse French dictionary for this one, Roger.
Okay. All right. So we need, so this is in French then. Makes it even that tougher. But the voice is still very familiar. Listen in to this. If you know the answer, email us, roger@sportsnet590.ca, or send a tweet at @TheRodge590, and you could win a pair of Rogers Cup tickets. But this one is not in English.
Je pense que Rafa qui va pour le 7e, c'est le favori. Je veux dire, je ne crois pas perdre de 7 avant Monte Carlo et Barcelone. Bon, voilà. Alors, déjà là, ça commence comme ça. Et après, il va pour le 7e. Alors, il faut même, normalement, il n'a même pas discuté. C'est fou qu'on discute même ça. Je pense qu'Rafa a fait un bon boulot de dire qu'il n'est pas favori, peut-être. Mais en tout cas, pour moi, c'est le grand favori parce que je l'ai joué ici à tellement de reprises ici et je sais à quel point il est incroyable ici à Roland-Garros.
Tom, you are a rascal. That one's in French, but the voice is still familiar, you know? Email us, roger@sportsnet590.ca, roger@sportsnet590.ca, or a tweet @TheRodge590, @TheRodge590 on Twitter, and we'll make a draw from all correct entries for a pair of Rogers Cup tickets coming up. Congratulations to Angie Ferlin. Angie, congratulations. You knew the mystery sounder last week, which was Andy Murray. You win the Rogers Cup tickets for that Tuesday of the Rogers Cup here in Toronto and qualify to win the racket later in the season as well. Tom, you cad you. You got the French one. Good for you.
Well, people should get this one, Rog. Let's be honest about it.
They better get it because it's a very familiar voice, just speaking a little different language. You got the emails and the tweets. You can put your entries in. Aces returns again on June the 20th and June the 26th. Tom Tebbett be back in studio then. Tom, always a treat. Enjoy Paris, my friend.
Thanks, Rog.
That's Tom Tebbett live in Paris at the French Open. I'm Roger Lajoie. Folks, thanks for listening to Aces once again this week. Again, if you know the sounder, roger@sportsnet590.ca on email, on Twitter, @TheRodge590. We'll make a draw of all correct entries for Rogers Cup tickets next week. Aces returns again on June the 20th and 26th. Thanks to technical director Brett Armstrong and producer Igor Enriquez tonight. For Tom Tebbett, I'm Roger Lajoie. Jeff Salmon is coming up next on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. We'll talk to you again in a couple of weeks right here on Aces on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.